Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, why, when we're so busy doing good, should we take time out to pray? An official from the Vatican's charity arm, Cor Unum, explains why. And how a window in a wall can be a blessing, but opening a door could mean so much more. We go to Jerusalem to hear the story of a Catholic convent's peaceful battle to keep their nursery school open. The Pope's charity arm, the Pontifical Council Cor Unum, has organized a week-long spiritual retreat at the Marian Shrine of Jasnagora in Częstochowa, Poland, to reinvigorate the hearts and minds of continental Europe's Catholic aid workers. European bishops and the directors and presidents of the continent's diocesan caritas and other Catholic charitable organizations are attending the spiritual exercises from the 29th of November to the 3rd of December. Monsignor Anthony Figueredo, an official at Cor Unum, told me that the spiritual exercises have been called for the last few years in response to Pope Benedict's encyclical Deus Caritas Est. In today's increasingly secularized world, he says, people have distanced themselves from God, and the faith is being snuffed out. How do we get people back to know God? Monsignor Figueredo says Pope Benedict very strongly believes that it is through charity that we can know God.
Christian charity, charitable organizations as we know them, have changed in our time. There's been a plethora of organizations which have grown in the last decades, but the very nature of charity has changed. In the past, it was very much a religious congregations, you know, the sisters, the priests, who ran hospitals, ran nursing homes, ran aid agencies. And of course, today we have a decline in religious congregations. We also have the fact that many governments have begun to emphasize the need for charitable organizations, not only Christian. I look at the United States, the largest provider of the of charity outside of the government is the Catholic Church. And I think one could say the same for many countries. But the point is that how do we maintain the identity of a Catholic organization?
Because most of the people working in them now would be lay people.
Well, that's the point. Yes, exactly. They are lay people, very fine lay people. But we need to have a discerning eye. How do we form them in order that what is true and authentic to the Catholic Church is really passed on through them? I used to work at a Catholic university in New Jersey, and we had the same issue. How do we keep a Catholic university Catholic? Because we can get the numbers, we can get the funds, we can get the students, but what makes us different? Not better, but what makes us different from the Red Cross? What makes us different from an agency which provides help in another way?
A portrait of a Catholic charity worker.
A Catholic charity worker is one who has the same sentiments as Jesus Christ. So Jesus Christ, one looks at the parable of the Good Samaritan in that encyclical I was speaking of earlier, Deus Caritas Est. Pope Benedict says that the program of a charitable worker, the program of every Christian, is the Good Samaritan. And so basically, we should look for that parable. What's interesting about that parable is that the scholar of the law asked Jesus, what should I do to gain eternal life? And Jesus says, love God and love your neighbor. Do this and you will live. So it's not a matter of something in the head. It's a matter of actually doing. And that's really different, because the scholar knew the law, but did he put it into practice? And I think the real difference is he looked at the world from his superior position. He looked from up down, we could say, looking down at those in need, whereas Jesus turns that completely around. He becomes one with the person in need. That's compassion. You know, compassion actually means compassio. It means to become one with the person who is suffering. It's a charity of proximity. One sees it in Mother Teresa. The heart of Christian charity, the heart of a charity worker, is to become as much as possible like the one we serve. And that is the key. We don't look down, we don't patronize, we become one. We put ourselves absolutely in their shoes. There's some great saints, Tracy. I was just visiting the other day the Church of St. Benedict Labre, Benedict Joseph Labre, here in Rome. And he was, he made himself a street person, a saint. He made himself a street person. He went and lived on the streets to become as much as possible like the people live on the streets in Rome. Because unless we do that, how will we know the sentiments of those who suffer?
I would venture to say that most Catholic charity workers are already on the right road, because no one who works for one of these organizations is ever going to get rich. I mean, they've specifically chosen a career in a field where they know they're not going to be making lots of money. So already it seems to me that they're on the right path, emulating the work of Jesus.
Yes, I think those who work in charitable organizations are people, very fine people, great enthusiasm, great zeal. But the point is that some of our organizations today have become so large, and we live in a world that says, you know, in terms of discrimination. For example, I know in one country there's a Catholic charitable organization. It's the main Catholic charitable organization in that country. But I think out of 15 staff, 11 are Muslims. And they're very zealous, no doubt about that. But I just wonder how that charitable organization really diffuses Christ. Because it's not just a matter of charity. Charity, we meet the immediate need, but we always bring the message of Christ as well. And so I think even though we take a cut in our salary, we are very zealous, we also need to be missionaries of Jesus Christ. And that's really what we do in these spiritual exercises. For a week, we put people in front of Christ and we say, we're so busy, we have so many projects, so many things on our desk, and that's very fine. I got a call from one person. He's in charge of a charitable organization in a country in Europe, and he said, I cannot come. He was planning on coming, because he said, I have so many projects on my desk. And I said to him that that's exactly why you need to come. We need to have time to put ourselves in front of Christ. And when we do that, we find we're renewed, we're reinvigorated, and we have more time for those we serve. You know this story of Mother Teresa, when her sisters, some of her sisters complain they don't have enough time to serve the poor. And they said, you know, let's cut down our holy hour, the time. And she said, well, now we'll do double the time. We'll do double the time, because that's where we receive the energy if there's so much need out there. And so that's basically it. I mean, people think, what will we do? In a word, we pray. So it'll be very much a beautiful communion. That's one of the main points, Tracy. You know, charitable workers meet people. You know, someone from London meets someone from Kazakhstan and sees that the needs in London and Kazakhstan are very different. But Christ unites us, Christ binds us. And when we diffuse Christ we have a common mission.
And a warm thanks there to Monsignor Anthony Figueiredo, an official at the Pontifical Council Cor Unum. Now, I'd like you to come with me to Jerusalem, the site of our Lord's Last Supper, his agony in the Garden of Gethsemane, his crucifixion on Mount Calvary, and his resurrection. I was there again in October 2010 and want to give you an update on a story I covered earlier in the year. I call it the story of the window in the wall, but what was once a mixed blessing is now a fond memory. My journey to see the window in the wall began with this extraordinary nun.
One day, sisters woke up in the morning and they found that the trees of the garden were all cut because they had decided that the wall would have such a line which follow the line they wanted. And we have to say that this wall really has changed our life there.
Spanish-born sister Alicia Vacas recalls the grim day in 2004 that the Catholic convent she shares with 11 other Comboni sisters on the southern slope of the Mount of Olives became yet another casualty of the ongoing tensions between Israelis and Palestinians. Israeli soldiers appropriated convent property and began constructing what is today a section of Israel's towering 26-foot-high security wall, cutting off this part of Bethany overlooking Jerusalem from the West Bank. It was here, the place of Lazarus, as Al-Aizariya is known in Arabic, that the Gospel of John tells us Jesus rose Lazarus from the dead. The Comboni sisters have lived there since before Israel became a state. I first visited the sisters' convent in January 2010. The wall cuts right through the convent property and takes up two sides of a tiny playground for the kindergarten that the nuns run for some 50 Palestinian children.
It means that the families of the kids of the kindergarten, they remain all on the other side. And the village of Elizareya, the village of Bethany, is on the other side. The church is on the other side.
Is that the church where you go to Mass?
Yeah, this is our church. And this is our parish, let us say. In Jerusalem, there is only one parish. So this church is not, juridically, it's not a parish. But it is the church we go every week. And this is the Christian community we follow. And the families we know, we visit, and everything now is the other side of the wall. And the other way of reaching out is going to the checkpoint, which is 15 kilometers far from home.
And how long could that take you?
Well, if you go by car, it could be like half an hour, because you have to make 15 kilometers after the checkpoint and then come back. And if you go with public means, it is more than 1 hour, because you have to go to Jerusalem, and from Jerusalem you have to take another bus going all around through the checkpoint to basically to the other side of the wall. It is like it could be 20 meters far from home. The church is not more than 50 meters far from home. But you have to go through Jerusalem and then through the checkpoint, and it takes more than 1 hour. If there are no problems in the checkpoints, because sometimes you get stuck at the checkpoint, sometimes if there are Jewish feast days, for instance, checkpoints are closed. If the situation, the political situation is unstable or is risky, checkpoints are closed, so there are so many limitations.
Sister Alicia and the other sisters are cut off from their church, and once familiar Christian processions on feasts like Palm Sunday can no longer take place. Those on the wrong side of the wall no longer have access to hospitals, schools, shops, and businesses.
It is a fact that occupation prevents religious people to reach the places of prayer for both Muslim and Christians. Palestinians from the West Bank, they cannot reach the temples or the places for prayer. Christians cannot go to the Holy Sepulchre to pray, even on feast days, like the procession you were talking about, and Muslims cannot go to Al-Aqsa in their feast days. And especially during the feast days, the roads are closed. They are not allowed to go. So it's a difficult situation for all of them. Mm-hmm. And many of them have lost their jobs because they cannot get to Jerusalem to work. And a place like Caesarea, Bethany, was mainly dependent on Jerusalem because it is so close. It was so easy for them. Most of them work on tourism or selling things to pilgrims. And so more than 60% of the families in Caesarea lost their jobs because of the wall. What has been the solution for them? For many years, they have been jumping the wall. And at the beginning of the construction of the wall, our garden was literally occupied by people who were trying to find their ways to cross the garden and reach Jerusalem. When the wall became 8 meters tall, it was impossible.
The sisters have painted brightly colored giraffes, lions, and tigers to soften the impact of the wall on the 3 to 4 year old toddlers in their care. But I wonder how successful that effort is. The solid cement structure casts a deep shadow over the little playhouse, slide, and games. Thanks to Vatican intervention, Israeli authorities opened a small window in the wall, allowing the children to return to school in 2009.
We have to say that most of the families are very poor there, and they are already supported with the school fees, so they don't have the chance of getting a bus and paying transportation for so small, so young kids every day. So the situation became very complicated, and the intervention of the Vatican ambassador, the nuncio, was a blessing for us, and he managed, I don't know how, but he managed to convince the army to open space for the kids. They promised the gate, and the gate became sort of window. I mean, it's so high, it starts more than 1.60 meters high.
1.60 meters is 5.25 feet off the ground. When I visited, it was in time to see the nuns in their white habits take the tiny hands of these toddlers and lead them 2 at a time up a steep flight of metal steps to reach the open window. They were so careful with their tiny charges, not one must trip or fall, too far to drop. The scene before me was surreal, to say the least, and I was suddenly overwhelmed by an immense, an inexplicable sense of grief, the kind you feel when someone very dear to you dies. But for Sister Alicia, that staircase was a blessing.
It took a long time since they put it. So the first days we were literally lifting the kids and passing through the window with,
And there's a huge drop on the other side.
Yeah. And we were using bricks, for instance, or anything just to make it a bit higher and,
helping
the kids through.
And you've got the soldiers there with their machine guns.
And what
do the kids think about that situation?
Well, at the beginning it was traumatic, also because most of the kids, they have a very difficult background and ideas on soldiers. So the first day we had the terrible experience of one child, for instance, crying and shouting he wanted the dad. And of course families cannot pass through this as a small window. So we cannot have a real contact with the families now because they cannot come to visit us. They cannot come to take the children if they are sick. They cannot come for the feast on Mother's Day. So this child was crying. He wanted the father, daddy. So sister told him, you know, I called your father. He's coming. Just to calm him down. And he started screaming more and more. And he said, no, soldiers are here. They will shoot at him. You know, they have this impression, they are very young kids, and their image of soldiers is a very aggressive one because of their experience on checkpoints and television. And we try to make things smoother somehow. And some of the soldiers are actually very nice, and some of them are even Arab Israelis. And one of them is a Christian Arab Israeli. And some of them are very kind with the kids, and the relationship between the children and the soldiers are nice and smooth. But it is a traumatic situation in any case, and it is so ridiculous. I mean, if you see the kids jumping through the window and waiting for hours, sometimes the soldiers forget to come and open, because this window is open 15 minutes at 8 o'clock in the morning and 15 minutes at midday. So quite often they just forget, or they are late, they have other business, and they come 1 hour later. So having the kids there under the window waiting for them to come is so ridiculous. So it doesn't make any sense.
Well, what happened next in this ongoing story really doesn't make any sense to me. The window in the wall disappeared over the summer, making it next to impossible for the sisters to reopen the nursery. The immense irony is that where the little window once hung now stands a towering sliding gate for the passage of vehicles, a man-sized door for pedestrians, a new guard tower, and what looks like a document processing center for walkthroughs, complete with in and out turnstiles. In sum, it is easy to understand why the sisters were relieved. They would no longer have to subject the toddlers to the steep climb up to the window and down the other side.
When they put this big gate, and we saw that everything was put in order in such a way that this big gate, in one way or the other, has to be open. It's functioning, actually. We saw it opening. We saw also this small door. So we say, okay, that is the door of the children. And also the parents on the other side, they thought so.
Italian sister Fulgida Gasparini breathes a sigh of frustration. The new gate remains closed, and the mixed blessing of the window in the wall, for her, is now a fond memory. According to the Apostolic Nuncio, Archbishop Antonio Franco, who has been negotiating the opening of the gate with Israeli authorities, it won't be opening anytime soon. Some have told the sisters the gate will never open.
We had a meeting with the military authorities early in September, and we were announced that this year the door would not open.
The Vatican's ambassador notes the Comboni sisters had received assurances from Israeli authorities when the wall was being constructed that they would be given access for the children.
But this year, the military were saying that there is a danger of security, and I was arguing that there is no danger, that we can also get the help, the collaboration on the other side to have the movement of the children without any problem. But in any case, they offered that will facilitate the transit of the bus. But the parents did not want the little children to be transported by bus.
Parents, first of all, they say kids so young, every day on the checkpoint, they see things that really, at times, they are also nasty.
Most of the parents from the wrong side of the wall were unwilling or simply couldn't afford to send their toddlers by bus, an hour-long journey each way through an armed military checkpoint. I don't think I'd have the courage to put my 3 or 4-year-old through such an ordeal. The 10 children whose parents did accept the option are accompanied by 2 teachers. They drive up to the checkpoint in their Palestinian van, get out, and pass the soldiers armed with automatic weapons, often, but not always, given priority over others waiting in the line. Once on the other side, they have to walk to another Israeli-licensed minibus, which will finally bring them to the convent nursery.
So for the parents to take a Palestinian minibus to reach a certain point to get the Israeli minibus to come in, you know, for them it's an expense that they cannot afford. To come to the nursery school, it's impossible for parents who cannot afford even to pay the school fee of the children. And then, you know, you have also to see the type of facilitation, because when they say we facilitate, who is we? Because every day you have new personnel at the checkpoint. So one day you meet the one who says, oh yes, I know, these are the children, go. Another day you have somebody who tells you, stop there, children down, and let's see what it is. It's not so easy at the checkpoint. You know, there are also experiences made by the sisters who are working with Rabbi for peace.
Rabbis for human rights.
They go out to the villages to meet people who have no access to medicine, to the dispensary, to the hospital and so on. But when things are very serious, for instance, when a mother is about to deliver and there are problems, if you have to pass the checkpoint and things are not in order, the women stay there. Somebody can stay there 8 hours before being admitted to Victoria Hospital here up. You have to wait. We had a sister who became sick when we had the checkpoint here. She could not go to the hospital. We asked them just to remove a barrier to get the car in. They refused. They say no. And she had to go around and so on. You know. By the time that she was at the hospital, she was in coma. Surely they don't help, you know, when you have this experience, no?
Of the 55 children enrolled for the scholastic year 2010-2011, only half can now attend. Just a fifth of them are able to make what was once the 5-minute journey through the wall from the wrong side. The Comboni Sisters' kindergarten and home for spiritual retreats is an oasis of peace in an angry land. A caring place full of love, reconciliation, and just plain goodness.
You cannot generalize, you cannot say everybody is bad, you cannot say, okay, Israel is bad and Palestinians are good and so on. If you speak with the people, I'm sure that the majority of the Israeli people are not in agreement with this wall. And there are so many journalists, also women, who come here to see what is happening and so on. So it means that not everybody accepts that this wall is there as a protective wall.
Am I crazy to believe that if a window in a wall can be a blessing in disguise, the opening of a door can open hearts and minds in a never-ending conflict that has bred hatred and wounded so many souls? Only time will tell. That brings today's program to a close, but we'll be back at the same time tomorrow, so do try to join us again then. Also, you can hear this and other programs, of course, on our website. The address is 105live.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.